Hello, and welcome to the Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast, a podcast all about constructing your career in neurology. I'm your host, Sarah Schaefer from the Yale School of Medicine and the founder of this podcast. And today I'm speaking with Dr. Corwin Williams, who is a child neurologist at Phoenix Children's Hospital and chair of the Coding and Payment Policy Subcommittee, or COPAY, at the American Academy of Neurology. Today we're going to be talking about the brand new E&M code, G2211, that first launched in January of this year, 2024. Thanks for joining us today.
Sarah, I'm so excited to be here. You reached out to me via Synapse, and I was a little gobsmacked to find someone asking me about G2211 and wanting to talk a little bit more about it. So really a pleasure to be here and meet you.
All right, well, let's dive right in. So for our listeners, if you want more information about billing and coding in general, especially in the outpatient setting, listen to episode 20 of this podcast for a great overview and introduction. Corwin, can you give us some background on this particular new code? How did it come about and what is the purpose?
You know, it's actually a bit of an interesting history. And just a quick background, when new codes are created, typically they go through the AMA CPT's committee, which you may have heard about in a previous podcast. But it's a process in which many different specialties of medicine come together, decide the code is needed, how to value the code. That's then submitted to the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. They review it and they either agree or disagree with the code creation and its valuation. This code is a little different. It did not go through that process. This code was actually created by the CMS itself, and that's why it has a label of G and not the typical five-digit number. So it's actually, I don't want to get too much into the details, but it's actually a G code created by Medicare because it felt that there was a code that needed to reflect the complexity of taking care of chronic conditions that was not adequately reimbursed in the currently existing codes for evaluation and management of outpatients. So this is very interesting. CMS took it upon itself and recognized that cognitive specialists, such as neurologists, were not being appropriately valued. And so they created this. Well, it turns a little interesting because this code was initially proposed back in 2021, and I think it kind of speaks to the power of advocacy. Congress actually passed a law that forbade CMS from implementing this code before January 1st, 2024. This was done at the behest of some congressmen who primarily were from surgical specialties. You might imagine surgical specialties and other proceduralists would not necessarily be able to utilize this code. And so they were opposed in large part because if you increase payments to one particular code, the neutrality requirements of healthcare budgeting requires that you reduce payments for others. So surgeons saw this as or other proceduralists saw this as a potential negative impact on their revenue. So that law was passed and CMS was forbidden to do this until 2024, but that proviso blocking implementation of this code lapsed and no further laws were in effect. So CMS was now free to implement this after a rulemaking process. So that's a little bit of the background of the G2211, probably a little bit more than you wanted, but it's kind of an interesting background.
Wow, I can't believe this was actually initiated by CMS and the Medicare and Medicaid system saying we want to pay the doctors more of what they're worth. That's very surprising.
Well, I think this speaks, again, to the long-term advocacy of the American Academy of Neurology on issues like this, as well as other cognitive specialists saying, like, yes, we do see patients in the office, but oftentimes there is medicine still being practiced between visits. And that's what this new code is really trying to get to the heart to. People who are managing chronic conditions that just don't stop in the office, but continue to have needs between office visits, that needs to be recognized.
Absolutely. So this is an add-on E&M code. I'll just clarify, it's not a modifier to an E&M code that you already do, like a level 4 office visit, for example, might have a modifier if you have a resident or trainee with you, for example. It's not a modifier. It's an additional add-on code, a separate E&M code. What are some other examples of separate E&M codes like the G2211?
Well, I think the one that comes to mind most readily is for prolonged services. So if you were to see a patient for, say, a follow-up patient, and you saw them for, say, 78, 90 minutes or 80 minutes, the time frame for a level five visit is 40 to 54 minutes. 15 minutes beyond the upper band limit of that time would allow you to utilize prolonged care code. So I think that's probably the most common or the easiest example to access for another add-on code.
So I looked into some of the press releases on this code in anticipation of our conversation. A lot of them speak more to use in primary care. That's a natural fit for a code that has to do with complex, serious, or longitudinal care of a patient. What should neurologists or other specialists outside of the internal medicine primary care setting know about when it's appropriate to use this code and when it's not appropriate? What are some of the exclusion criteria, if you will?
Well, I think the first thing I want listeners to know is that just because you're a specialist does not mean that you cannot utilize this code. It is explicitly mentioned in the language that specialists can also utilize this code. And really, the core feature is that you, as a provider, are managing a single or complex chronic condition longitudinally. So I think that's really the key language we want to focus on. You are responsible for the longitudinal management directly. And so in that instance, whether you're a pediatrician, whether you're an internist, a family practice doctor, but whether you're a neurologist, whether you're an epileptologist, movement disorder specialist, if you are involved in longitudinal management of a chronic problem, then this code is for you.
A couple of additional clarifications. You can't use this code with a modifier 25, which is used for a separately identifiable billable thing on the same day. So, for example, I might use this if I see a Parkinson's patient for an office visit and also do Botox for sialorrhea. So, I couldn't use a 25 modifier and bill the G2211. Also, my understanding is that this is okay to use for new or return patients and is something that can be used in telehealth encounters as well.
Absolutely.
Well, so this, when I first learned about this code, I was focusing more about on the language that says serious or complex, in terms of the types of diagnoses that you might be able to use this code for. But it sounds like even more simple single diagnoses that you manage chronically might apply. So, for example, I'm a movement specialist. So, coming to mind would be an essential tremor patient, for example. Maybe I'm managing one medication for this patient and they're doing okay, and I might be titrating things up or down or leaving them relatively the same. Or maybe they're very complicated and on multiple meds, and I'm coordinating care with psychiatry and cardiology and primary care, or we're being considered for DBS or something like that. Would you code these two examples differently? Does it matter how complex the disease is, or does it just matter that you're seeing them over time?
I would say that while those are very different circumstances as far as the tremor versus the patient who has a more complex movement disorder, I would have, from my standpoint, the complexity is really going to be reflected there in the E&M code that you use for those two patient visits, and depending on what you document. However, in both instances, you are involved in the longitudinal care of that patient, and from that standpoint, you fulfill the language requirements set forth by CMS. So I would say both of those would qualify for a G2211.
Awesome.
Well, again, I think you have to consider other instances in which this sort of longitudinal care is in place. So think about it from the standpoint of proceduralists such as surgeons who perform a surgery, and you may or may not be aware that they have a global period. So depending on the procedure and the specialty, there may be 10 or 30 days in which patients are going to see those providers, and there's not further reimbursement. That kind of chronic longitudinal management over that short period of time is already wrapped into the initial code. So that has existed for quite a long time, and that's another discussion in and of itself. There's nothing quite like that in medicine, and this code really tries to get to the core of that by saying that, yes, we realize you may see that patient for an essential tremor, but that doesn't mean that they're never going to call you in the interim between visits. That doesn't mean that you're not going to reach out to your staff requiring refills or things like that. And so this code says there's more work associated here, and we want to make sure that you're being reimbursed for that work.
And what is the threshold for longitudinal care? Do you have to see patients at a certain frequency in order for it to count?
You know, this is a relatively new code, and this is something that we often see, that there will be potentially refinements in the future that more specifically speak to that. But as written now, the language simply says that there needs to be longitudinal care. So you can certainly imagine someone who comes to you with complaints about memory as a neurologist, and, you know, your evaluation doesn't really demonstrate that, like their memory seems intact, and you don't feel that there's much more warranted, maybe an MRI, and if that's normal, then the plan is, let's have you go work on stress management, let's have you focus on some other issues. That's not really going to be longitudinal care. Now, if the patient comes in and they score poorly on their memory testing, and you have a high suspicion for a dementia, and you schedule follow-up, and you develop care plans, then that's a patient who you are establishing yourself as a longitudinal provider, in which case you would say you would also utilize G2211. So similar, say, chief complaints, maybe very different outcomes, very different expectations about how you will be following this patient.
I did see in one publication that you have to see patients at least annually, or that's the expectation to use this code. Is that a good rule of thumb?
I think that's a good rule of thumb. So I think that's certainly reasonable. But again, there's not been any definitive statement in the code language. And I think when we talk about documentation, there's not a lot to be held to as far as criteria. But I think the language does specifically speak to longitudinal care. You may have heard me say that over and over so far in our podcast. And so I think from my standpoint, speaking personally, I think that's something that's not a bad idea to mention in your notes. Sometimes it's self-obvious to say a provider that, you know, I'm an oncologist taking care of someone with liver cancer. I'm going to be seeing them again, that there's going to be longitudinal care involved. But again, it never hurts to be explicit.
Yeah, that goes to another question I had, is there any specific documentation that's necessary to guarantee reimbursement? Should clinicians have a dot phrase, if you use Epic or other, quick little phrase handy that they should use, or is normal documentation adequate?
As of now, CMS hasn't required there to be explicit documentation. I think, just speaking personally for myself, from a more conservative standpoint, I would say it's always nice to have that documentation so that if there were an audit, you can say that as a provider, I intend to continue to see this patient on an ongoing basis for this problem, whatever verbiage you care to use. But I think having that documentation is at least a prima facie case that there is a longitudinal relationship, which is really what the code demands.
Okay. Let's go through another common example, trainee clinics, resident and fellow clinics. A lot of these clinics see very complex patients with multiple neurological issues, psychosocial impacts to care, but they're often scheduled under the trainee. And as we know, the attending is the one billing for these patients. If an attending staffs these patients, can they bill a G2211? Would it depend if the attending themselves has continuity versus if the clinic sees a rotating group of attendings, which is common in these clinics?
I think this is a really interesting question, and it's something that my co-pay committee has actually discussed a little bit. And I think, again, the CMS language does not speak directly to this, but if we look at the spirit of the language, that these codes are really meant to talk about ongoing care. And that's not always going to be provided directly by the provider. Sometimes it's by the nurse or other colleagues, in which case you could argue that the trainees certainly are the ones who may be taking more of a forward-facing view of the patients, but the attendings still are going to be involved. And even if we're talking about different attendings at different visits, there's still going to be longitudinal care provided by this entity, in this case, this neurology group. And so I think if you look at it from a more holistic standpoint, that neurology group has taken on the responsibility of caring for that patient. And if one is involved, then I think all is involved. The same way if one of my colleagues were to see a patient in the hospital and they left the group, our group would still have some responsibility for that patient to continue their care. So I think you can certainly make the argument that even if we're talking about a continuity clinic for trainees, that they're still part of the entity, that neurology group, and that neurology group is going to be responsible for providing ongoing care.
Now, the code is currently recognized, as you mentioned, by Medicare and Medicaid. What should a clinician understand about billing with this code with relation to patient insurance? Should it only be added for patients on Medicare or Medicaid, or is it okay to add the code irrespective of insurance when appropriate, of course, and the rest can be taken care of on the back end? I know there's talk about whether other insurance companies will follow suit and when that might happen. What should the actual clinician understand about this?
Well, I think in general for any code, when it's created, you always have to ask the question, will payers cover it? So in this particular instance, this was created by CMS. So Medicare does recognize this code. When Medicare recognizes codes, then Medicare Advantage plans also will recognize the codes. When we talk about other payers, it really is up to individual payers. Now, as an aside, I would say that CMS, when they proposed this code, said that they anticipated roughly 30 to 40% of E&M codes would use this code. So they are expecting a fairly high utilization rate, and they think over time it will only increase. Again, when we talk about other payers, I think it's a good idea to ask. And so since this will be probably a highly utilized code by neurologists, or should be a highly utilized code by neurologists, I think it's worthwhile to reach out certainly to your larger payers and ask them, are they going to be covering this code? And if they say, we are not, you might want to ask, why not? Decisions change with time. So if they say no now, you may want to check back 6 months or a year later to see if they've changed their mind. But unfortunately, there's no easy way. We and at the Coding and Payment Policy Committee through the AAN do periodically reach out to different payers and ask them if they are going to cover new codes, including this one. We don't always get great feedback from different payers, or they may get referrals to their websites. But I would just encourage neurologists to look at their top five payers and ask them, are they anticipating that they'll be covering this code or not?
Is there a risk if you do enter the code in your billing practices and the payer on the other side does not cover the code? Is there a risk that that bill would go directly to the patient?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure I know the answer to that specifically. It probably comes down to some of the rules of the payer. Some payers don't allow you to direct bill patients. Others might allow you to do that. So I think, again, that's a good question to ask in advance for your payers, just to kind of find out how would they handle that. And I guess the other question that potentially is there, and again, I'm not a coder, so I can't speak to this directly, but you know, it may be worthwhile to question whether that bill is going to be covered by the payer or not, because if it's attached and they don't cover it, I don't know if that might delay payments for the underlying E&M charge. So that may be another consideration.
And we've talked a lot about this code. How many RVUs are we actually talking about here?
Yeah, I think we're talking about neurology nuts and bolts. I think you have to ask that question. So the work RVU assignment for this code is 0.33. And I think if we're talking about a level three, that's probably somewhere in the range of 1.2. So it's a fraction of a level three visit. But again, it's reimbursement that we in neurology particularly had not been seeing before for the same level of work. So again, I think there should be a low bar to utilization of the code. Again, always a good idea to ask your payers, are they covering it? But, you know, if you do this multiple times in the course of a day, over the course of a month, over the course of a year, we are talking about a significant amount of reimbursement. I think the other thing to kind of keep in mind too is that with the introduction of new codes and new allocation of monies, again, with budget neutrality, that means that payments reimbursement is cut in other ways. And so we did see a bit of a reduction in the conversion factor with this most recent physician fee schedule. And a code like this can help offset that reduction, particularly for neurologists.
Yeah, sounds like it could really add up. And if you're not using it, you're leaving a lot of money on the table.
Absolutely.
So how can listeners find out more information about how to properly use this code if they have additional questions?
We at the Coding and Payment Policy Committee have been working on some resources. So we met because you noticed a post I made in Synapse about that. So we're going to be creating more resources on this code at the AAN website. So if you go to the tab called Practice and then under Practice Management, you will see a section called Billing and Coding. And there are going to be some resources on G2211. We're in the process of finalizing a flowchart to kind of help people navigate whether or not they can utilize G2211. And this is a good place where members can help us help other members. We're always struggling trying to figure out what means of educating, sharing information work best for other members. So certainly if you have feedback, particularly on the flowchart that I anticipate will be out in the next week or so, or if you have feedback about what's on the website, what's not on the website, we would love to hear from you, particularly as we try and create more educational resources for fellow members.
All right. Thank you for meeting with me quickly to talk about this new code so that clinicians can start using it right away. And I appreciate all of the information you've provided today. Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast was created and produced by myself, Sarah Schaefer. It is not recorded as an official podcast of any institution or organization. The podcast is unfunded. Opinions are those of the individual participants. Music by Audrey Nath, artwork by Shivani Ghoshal. Want more content like this? Be sure to subscribe to the Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast wherever you get your podcasts to hear more about constructing your career in neurology. Follow us on Twitter at NeuroBolts and on Facebook at Neurology Nuts and Bolts to stay up to date on new content and give us feedback on what you want to hear. And tell your friends. Thanks for joining us.